Recording in progress.
And then George, can you
Ron's not going to be here.
Really?
Hello.
You ready? No.
Aloha and good morning, everybody. Can somebody wave or say something to see if the TV's up and running?
Good morning, we can hear you.
Thank you, Marissa, appreciate it.
Nobody's putting up their face today.
And I hope that has nothing to do with post-election. Just kidding. Well, good morning, everyone. As we're trying to work out our technical difficulties at this time, if you tend to lose my visual or my voice, try and signal us. It appears very quiet right now, but here we are. I call this meeting of the Hawaii Correctional Systems Oversight Commission to order at this time. Thank you for being with us. We'll do the I call your name, just answer with a here. Mike Town.
Here.
Martha Tournay.
Here.
Ron Ibarra.
Here. Here.
Good morning, Ron. And
morning.
Ted Sakai has texted us earlier that he'll be a little 5 to 10 minutes late. And so we'll expect him and we'll make an announcement once he arrives. So present physically here is myself, Chair Mark Patterson, Martha Tournay, and Mike Town, and Ron is on our Zoom. So, with no further ado, as we begin, commissioners, can we take a look at the agenda for the October 20th, 2022 commission meeting? The agenda has been posted on our website for those of you on the Zoom if you want to review it, but take a time. We received this a few days ago. Commissioners, if you have any edits or concerns or comments to make at this time, particularly those minutes, let me know, or I'll accept a motion to approve.
I move they be approved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the minutes of the October 20th Hawaii Correctional System Oversight Commission meeting minutes. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say same. Motion passed. Thank you, everyone. As we move on our agenda, as we have posted the minutes on our website, we also have posted from last week our agenda. So for those from the public who are here this morning, we're at the point of our agenda where we're going to open it up for any public testimony on our agenda items. And I'm asking that you keep it within a couple minutes of your comments. So with no further ado, I can take a wave of a hand or a digital hand to identify anyone wishing to make a comment. I'll start with Bob Merce, who's here in the office, I mean, in the room with us. Go ahead, Bob.
Thank you, Jeff Anderson. I'd like to comment on item 8 of the agenda, which has to do with the new jail. There's something going on in the community that I think we need to be aware of. Number one is that we have a program called Weed and Seed in Chinatown that is focusing on driving the jail population up by arresting a lot of people in Chinatown and putting them into the jail. We know this is one of the areas where we have the most homeless people, we have mentally ill people, we have people with multiple problems, and our response is to arrest them and put them in jail as weed, and we think of them as eradicating weeds. We also have recently experienced a situation in Waikiki where we have stopped allowing the judges to grant release on only cognizance of certain poor people who were arrested in Waikiki. We had a tradition of a judge would consistently review some of the arrests and release people on only cognizance, and newspapers have reported that has been terminated. And then now, if you're arrested and you're one of these low-income people, you're going to go into jail. And so those are two programs that are really driving the jail population. And now we have a third, and that's the one I would like to speak to briefly. And that is an article that appeared in the November 14th Star Advertiser in which is Steve Aum, the Honolulu prosecutor, is taking the position that the HOPE probation program is not being run properly, because not every technical violation is being punished, and as a result, there's a threat to public safety. Two things about that. One is the article doesn't point out that the study that Steve often cites in support of his program had a finding that, quote, the average number of charges for a violent crime tend to favor HOPE, but this difference is not statistically significant, meaning that HOPE probation, as opposed to probation as usual, does not reduce violent crimes. And so to say that there is a threat to public safety, I think, is a bit of a stretch. And additionally, the article doesn't refer to the rigorous study by, I think it's Patricia, I'm blanking on her name right now. The study is called Rigorous Multi-State Evaluation Finds HOPE Probation Model Offers No Advantage Over Correctional Conventional Probation in 4 Study Sites. So there is evidence that the program HOPE probation simply doesn't work. And it hasn't been evaluated in Hawaii recently. But we do know that the program is not being run the way it was previously, because judges are not sending everybody to jail for every single violation. So what the prosecution wants in this case then is to put more people in jail. So we have more people in jail because of Weed and Seed, more people in jail because of the Waikiki situation, more people in jail because of he wants it because he thinks that this program is not being operated. I looked at the 1 year prior to the onset of the pandemic, and there were, on average, using data from the Department of Public Safety, 346 probation violators in the jail prior to the pandemic. Recently, the most recent one, 3 days ago, the same day that this article by Steve on Steve Aum appeared, there were 229. So we have had a significant reduction in the number of probation violators from 346 average for the year prior to the pandemic to 229. Now, the prosecutor wants everybody who violates to be punished and go to jail, because that is the only punishment, the usual punishment for all violations. And therefore, he wants to push it back up to, I'm assuming, what it was pre-pandemic, which would be around 346 people. If you look at $238 a day to incarcerate someone, that's about $82,000 a day prior to the pandemic that we were spending to house probation violators, as opposed to around $55,000 today, because we have many fewer. Also, this has an effect on the cost of the new jail, because if you're going to continue to incarcerate roughly 300 males, that was the average in the year before the pandemic, you're going to have to build at least 300 cells for those, 300 beds for those people. And you're actually going to have to build more than that, because in a year before, for example, in February of 2020, there were 400 probation violators in the jail. So you're going to have to allow for a peak use of the increase in the average daily population. So you're going to have more than 300 beds. But assuming 300 beds are what you're going to have to build for the probation violators, each bed will cost around $750,000. Because if you assume that, as Governor Ige has said in an article quoted by Kevin Dayton here, that the new jail will likely cost $1 billion. It'll have around 1,315 beds. So that works out $750,000 per bed. And if you want to build a new jail to accommodate the whole probationers, that is going to cost then over $226 million simply to keep this program alive and continue to incarcerate people and put people who violate technical violations of parole in jail. So the question before us is really, do we really want to, does the program really work, for one thing? And number two, if it does work, do we want to spend $226 million minimum just to build the new facility, build the beds for those people, and then spend on the somewhere around $80,000 a day to keep them there? I think those are really serious issues, and I hope the commission will begin to address those and make some noise about them and make sure that the legislators and the public has a better understanding of what we're really talking about, instead of these articles that we see appearing in the paper that are really just fear-driven. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Were you folks online able to hear Bob's testimony?
Okay. I have.
Yes.
This is Ron.
Thank you.
Ron, were you able to hear it?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to call upon Brian B.
Good morning, Commission. Brian Black, Executive Director for the Sobey Law Center for the Public Interest. I submitted written testimony about a potential proposal for legislation regarding a procedure for disclosing the names of folks who have died in custody of the Department of Public Safety. I hope that you folks can consider that favorably. And the proposal that was attached was something that had been worked on with the department during the last legislative session. One potential tweak to that that could be considered is to make it clear that the department should be disclosing promptly after notification of next of kin, and not waiting for a full week to disclose. And I apologize that I won't be around to hear the remainder of the meeting, but if there are any questions, I am available.
Brian, this is Martha. Any tweaks you want us to make to the bill that we're proposing, I ask that you forward it to Christian so that we can incorporate it before we request the bill be introduced.
Yes, the one tweak that I'm suggesting was in the written testimony. There was some specific language on the second page.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work on that item, Brian. That's very important. We'll take a look at it, and if anything, we'll stay in contact with you. Thank you so much.
Martha, sure, quick. Brian, Mike Town here. What is the best statute in the country, in your mind, is the best practice?
Not for this issue, not every state needs a statute. Like, some just disclose this information under their public records law. So it's I'm not aware of too many states that have a procedure specifically like this, or feel the need to have a procedure specifically like this.
So what you want is a practice that is transparent, accurate, so we can learn what happened and maybe improve the system in case this was a preventable death. Is that right? Am I missing something, or is that okay?
That's correct. And disclosure, public disclosure in a timely manner, so that it can be tracked and issues addressed.
HIPAA is not a problem in your mind then?
No, and the Judge Tanaki in a recent decision addressed that issue with respect to this, in particular the issues that the things that would be disclosed in these reports as far as name and information like that, just for someone who has died in custody.
Thank you. Well said.
Thank you, Brian, for your support on this matter. We'll be keeping in touch as we approach the legislative session. Is there anybody else there for public testimony? I'm having a problem seeing all of the participants right now. So if you have something to say, just mention your name and we'll call upon you.
I had a question for Bob, if you have time.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yep. Mr. Mersh, you talk about Weed and Seed, Waikiki, Chinatown. The arrests are predicated on the criminal law. The criminal law in Hawaii is very, very expansive. It's used to manage people rather than always protect public safety, what I call sumptuary, S-U-M-P-T-A-R-Y. And you've done no studies on the petty misdemeanors, the misdemeanors, gambling, or what the reasons why people are picked up yet. Is that right?
I don't have any access to any data on that. Misdemeanors in the jail is old.
Okay.
It's from the time when we had the HCR 85 task force and we had access to this data. But this data is not published by some of it's published. And you can look at pretrial misdemeanors. And look, just for example, pretrial misdemeanors, on November 14th, 3 days ago, there were 112 arrests, 112 people incarcerated in OCCC. For petty misdemeanors, pretrial misdemeanors. That's a lot of people. That's a lot.
And you're aware that what has been felonized in Hawaii, i.e., a rob two, a shoplifting where somebody resists, or getting an ashtray out of a car theft, is not a felony in many states.
Right.
We've upgraded it. It may be a petty misdemeanor. And so I think that's, to me, that's very important. Thank you.
And what I didn't mention is that the OCCC population on 3 days ago was 1,117.
Ooh.
And the design capacity of the jail is 628, and the operational capacity is 954. So we already have a tremendously overcrowded jail. And what we are doing is just driving more and more people into the jail because of these policies. And that's what I think is a really serious and imminent problem that we need to address.
Thank you, Mike. We're going to go ahead and move on with no more further more public testimony for the Oversight Coordinator's report.
All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Kristen Johnson. I'm the Oversight Coordinator. I do put out a monthly report that can be found on our website under the Reports tab. So I'm going to start off. Unfortunately, there were two in custody deaths since our last meeting. On Thursday, October 27th at 1:30 a.m., a registered nurse at HCF found a person in custody, male between 70 and 80 years old, unresponsive in his cell within the infirmary. Medical staff did call 911 emergency medical services, and the on-call doctor pronounced the man deceased at 2:08 in the morning. Additionally, on Thursday, November 3rd at 7:30 a.m., OCCC staff responded to a medical backup call. A person in custody, male between 50 and 60 years old, was found unresponsive in his cell. Medical and security staff began administering aid and called 911. Staff performed CPR until EMS arrived to take over. EMS did ultimately pronounce this man deceased at 8:02 in the morning. The official cause of death is pending determination by the medical examiner's office, and Honolulu police were notified. For facility tours, I went to HCCC on October 28th, OCCC on November 3rd and November 14th, and HCCC on November 15th. The November 14th tour was interesting. I actually toured with the public defender's office, and so it was really interesting to go around with them and talk with them about their initial impressions of the facility after seeing it. So I hope that somebody's on today from the tour that can maybe talk about their experience during public comment, but I think it was definitely worthwhile. Commissioner Ibarra and I were scheduled to tour all of the Going Home Hawaii programs in Kona and Hilo on November 9th, but we did need to reschedule, so those will be rescheduled in the near future. For the Justice Involved Homeless Intergovernmental Collaboration, during our last meeting, the commissioners had decided to submit a letter of support to the Hawaii County Mayor, Mayor Mitroff. The letter basically requested the formation of an intergovernmental work group that was focused on justice involved homelessness and potential steps forward to guide these efforts in a meaningful way. The reason that we wanted to focus on Hawaii County is obviously we're very focused on HCCC right now with the severe overcrowding, and the vast majority of those who are in, most likely all the jails, but also in HCCC are, you know, people experiencing homelessness and mental health issues. Mayor Roth did respond. He felt that it should be actually spearheaded by a state entity. And so the commission will decide the next steps moving forward to support these efforts. But in the meantime, Going Home did offer up that they are happy to lead the effort, as many stakeholders are happy to be involved. Moving on to HCCC conditions update. So this is following a report that we had submitted on September 2nd, highlighting serious issues and concerns in HCCC. Starting off with overcrowding, when I was there yesterday, the facility is now down to 147% occupancy rate, which is still very high, but it's significantly lower from the original September 2nd visit, which was 170%. And so I do want to give a shout out to Tommy Johnson. I know he's been trying to work with the courts very diligently, but I think we all also recognize he can't do it alone. And so that is the main reason why I'm trying to get judges and people who are involved in the judicial branch to come into the facilities, get an idea, and then we meet after to kind of talk about potential solutions. Safety and security. So the construction is moving very fast, which is good to see. Four units have been completed and one unit is currently in progress. Once the construction is finished, the multi-purpose room, which is also known as the fishbowl, will be completely emptied, which is great. When I was there yesterday, there were 16 men still housed in that space. Lack of programs and basic services. So people in custody within Punahele, which is a space, it's all cells. They have reported that they did receive new uniforms in addition to soap and hygiene. However, people in custody in Wainuinui, which is the back portion of the facility, which is a dorm setting, they reported that they have not received any new uniforms. And I will say that their uniforms were visibly ripped and in terrible shape. Additionally, those same individuals reported that they do not receive any response when they file grievances. I did talk to the facility about that specifically. The grievance system is absolutely vital in a jail because it's one of the only ways that people in custody can make their issues known. And then there's supposed to be a specific process of figuring out what the issue is and how to solve it. The facility did tell me that they did have a grievance officer, but that they were transferred to a different facility. And now there is no grievance officer at HCCC. So I'm going to continue to follow up to see what the plan is there. But that is definitely something I was concerned about. For Suicide and Safety Watch, the day room space behind a door in Punahele, I've tried to explain this before. It's a weird description, but there's a space where if you walk behind a door, there's three additional cells. And so it's in that space behind the door, but in front of those cells where sometimes they will house individuals. I have brought this up every time that I have gone there. If I find an individual in that space, I bring it up immediately. I have very serious concerns due to lack of access to water and toilets, lack of visibility from the officer desk, lack of privacy from the 12 plus people who are in those cells who can stare at that person or make noise or yell at them. There's no bed frame, there's no area to store their property, and it's a complete lack of humane treatment and decency as a whole towards individuals with potentially self-harming ideations, because this space is typically used for people who are either on suicide watch or safety watch. So I'm very concerned about that. When I was there yesterday, there was one person who is behind the door of the G unit. The couple times I've gone before that, there actually hasn't been anybody, which was good to see, but I am very concerned about that. That is not a space that is appropriate at all for anybody in general, but particularly those who are potentially self-harming. The shipping container, COVID housing. My biggest concern when, well, every time I've gone there is that there is overcrowding in those spaces. To give the department credit, it's difficult because that's the space that's used for the COVID quarantine. That quarantine is 5 days long. And so anytime they receive somebody new, they have to put them in that space. OCCC is experiencing a very similar situation with their COVID house. So the overcrowding is challenging. However, the last time I went, the third and fourth cell, the lights were not working at all. And this is an issue I've brought up before because the way that the cells are set up, it creates complete darkness. You can't see in there at all. And so officers actually have to use a flashlight to look in to see and check on these people who are just in complete dark. The fourth cell, that is a cell that it looks like people in custody had actually ripped the lights off the wall. That's been out like that for at least a month now, which is unacceptable. I did talk to the facility about this. There have been many work orders placed, but no progress has been made on that particular cell.
Is George over here?
So I'm going to continue to check on that and report out, but I was disappointed to see that. For recreation, individuals have reported that they've been let out for recreation. They're at least getting out twice a week, which is great to hear. Friendly reminder, the federal standards do require, I believe it's daily, if not five times a week. But I do appreciate that the facility is putting in effort at least to get those guys out. For visits, due to construction, the visit room has been out of commission, which is completely true. I've gone through and I've seen it myself. However, when I went through the visit room yesterday, I noticed that there's actually wooden construction in progress currently to create non-contact visits. I'm very concerned about this because in-person contact visits are very impactful for rehabilitation and for keeping those family ties. And so to create a permanent structure where it's non-contact only, I'm very concerned about that. It would make more sense to me if there was an option for in-person or non-contact. That way the facility could, you know, use it as needed. But to have that be the only choice, I'm disappointed to see that. I will continue to monitor the conditions of HCCC. I do go there every other week, and I am very thankful for the staff on the ground who are always willing to walk around with me and answer all of my questions and, you know, be very straightforward with what they're experiencing too. So I'm very appreciative for the staff at HCCC. For general office updates, I want to remind you all that we do have an official mailing address. It's on our website. Our mail is considered privileged, which means that when I send a letter to somebody in custody, officers can open it in front of the individual, shake it out to make sure there's no contraband, but they cannot read the contents of the letter. In addition to that, any mail that people in custody would like to send out to me will not be opened. So it's very important so that people feel safe in contacting the commission. In addition to that, on our website, I highly recommend you all check out our website. We update it all the time with lots of goodies. But my favorite most recent addition is that we actually added a space for testimony right on the website. And you don't have to put in your name or your email. So it can be completely anonymous. We did that for anybody, but more specifically for staff, so that if they wanted the commission to be aware of something, they know that they can submit that and it is completely anonymous. There's no way to track it at all. So I hope you guys get a chance to check that out. For hiring processes, I would like to welcome our newest staff member, George. He's here with us today and he is amazing. He is my special assistant and he's really excited to get started. So I'd like to welcome him. In addition to that, we did officially post for our reentry and diversion oversight specialist. This is on our website. It's been on our website as of November 1st. We are keeping it up until the end of December. We wanted to do that so that, you know, people can spend time with families and not be stressed about applying. But please get your applications in. I would love to start reviewing. Again, you can find that on our website. And if you have any questions, you know, please feel free to contact me. Lastly, we have our expenses. I won't run through everything, but it's pretty much mostly travel back and forth to HCCC. And then for our monthly meetings, our next meeting will be December 15th. And that is the end of my report.
On the grievances, next time you're over at HCCC, can you ask the inmates about how effective or ineffective they think the grievance process is, regardless of whether there's a grievance officer? Because another thing, the ombudsman, still more than 50% of the cases they resolve each year are from inmates. Mm-hmm. But they will not address an inmate complaint until the inmate has exhausted the internal mechanisms, which includes the grievance process. So if the grievance process not working, they can't get to the ombudsman.
Yeah, so I did ask them, and it's challenging because what they're telling me is that it's useless, is that they're not getting responses.
Sorry.
Just you don't have to
mute yourself.
Oh, well.
So they are telling me something they're not getting responses. The challenge of it, though, that I've experienced in different jurisdictions is that sometimes when guys don't get the responses that they necessarily want, they also take that as not receiving a response. I haven't had the opportunity yet to start really digging in and reviewing grievances, so that'll give me a better idea of what's happening. But I will say they were all very adamant that even if they do have an, which they weren't even aware that they didn't have an officer, they didn't think there were any changes there, so that gives you an idea. But they felt like the facility is very unresponsive. In addition to that, I should note that they also brought up a couple examples that they showed me of notes where the facility's warden would respond to them in writing. And I was disappointed by the unprofessionalism that was in some of these responses. Mm-hmm. So that is all something that is to be addressed. But yeah, that's what I found.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that.
Mark, I have a few questions.
Ted's here. Okay, Ted.
Okay. The first, before I get to my questions, Kristen, just want to point out that in your section of the report on justice involved homeless. You got a mistake there. You talked about the November 20, 2022 commission meeting. I believe it was the October 20 meeting.
You are correct. I will fix that.
Yeah. I just also wanted to point out that our involvement with this initiative really came from Going Home, because Going Home notified us that the county had set aside funds to address homeless issues. And we, Going Home, felt that it was important for the county to address the justice involved homeless. So that's how the whole thing started. And that's how we got into it. I had some questions. First, on the population at HCCC, do you have a count by building? How many in Punahele, how many in Komohana, how many in Wainuinui? I'd like to see that.
Okay. I do have that. Would you like that publicly in the report too?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if you have that, I will send it to you.
Yeah. Second is on the issue of housing of the, Safety Watch, Suicide Watch. Do you know if the facility keeps logs whenever somebody is on Safety Watch or Suicide Watch? And if so, have you been able to review them?
I have not seen any logs about Suicide or Safety Watch.
Yeah, there is a requirement that they keep these logs, and it becomes a pretty important document. So I can you check on that next time?
Yeah.
And the third is on the containers. You mentioned that the inmates are moved out of the containers after the 5-day isolation period, or they're supposed to. Do you know that if they actually are moved out?
They are actually moved out. I talk to the individuals in there every time I go. I ask them how long they've been in there. The facility does try really hard not to mix new incoming people with people who are already there, so that the time doesn't reset. But it is admittedly challenging, and sometimes that does happen. But people are out. I think the most common that I've heard is that people only spend, I say only, but people spend 7 days there instead of the 5.
Okay. As long as they're mindful. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Ted. Go ahead, Mike.
Kristen, the judiciaries had to struggle, as you can imagine, with trials and all the hearings and thousands of people with civility. There's a rule that judges must be patient, dignified, and courteous. We have rules of professionalism, rules of civility. And I know in Department of Human Services, they have to be that. Anytime people interact, did I hear from you accurately, or did I mishear that some of the justice-involved people that were in the jails didn't feel they were dealt with civilly, courteously, nicely?
Yeah.
Both in writing and in words.
Yeah.
And action.
Yeah, and action. And I'm wondering if we could look nationally, if there's, we're supposed to be the Aloha State, and I think it's really important. I was involved with that effort with the judges and with the attorneys. And even our human beings, we get a little bit edgy sometimes, but there's no excuse for it, particularly if you're in a position of power. And these are our customers. These are the beneficiaries. They're in a fiduciary mode, and they shouldn't in any way be disrespected. Now, if they misbehave, you can sanction them. I don't have a problem with that. But what's your take on, just off the top of your head, on what I'm saying?
No, I agree. I mean, I think anybody who is in a professional field, like the Department of Public Safety, I mean, I think there has to be certain professional standards, and the way you speak to people or the way you address people is extremely important. And I think that the higher up that you get in the chain of command, the more power you obviously yield. And so to see a response from a warden that I found disrespectful in writing, it was surprising to me.
Yeah. Thank you.
This touches more on something that Ted has brought up many, many times, and that's the culture of our correctional facilities. And the culture is not one that is kind to inmates. And so it's a very big issue that's going to take a long time to resolve, but I think we certainly have a responsibility in helping to resolve that. Because what comes from the top, not just the warden, but even from the department, and then filters down, that the line workers feel they can behave this way. Mm-hmm. And changing the culture is going to be a long process, but it can be changed, and we need to do it. And we have a role in making those changes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Christian, for that very detailed report and letting us know all the work you've done since our last meeting and what more you have to do before the next meeting. So thank you so much for the report. And I just have a real comfortable feeling now at this point in our journey as a commission that a lot of information is being presented to us as a board from our oversight coordinator, and a lot of information now can be produced for the community to know what's going on, and transparency begins as we continue to work on this journey, as Martha is talking about. So I just want to acknowledge that Commissioner Sakai is on the meeting at this time, and we move on to our topic concerning the new jail and the update on a meeting with Correctional Reform Working Group. Ted, you want to start that?
Has Ted left us already?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I muted myself. But we had a meeting last week with the working group. Martha, Kristen, and I were present, and we agreed that we would be drafting potential bills to, my understanding is, number one, to make sure that the commission had the authority to do what the working group is proposing, which is to oversee the planning process. And number two, to make sure we have the resources. We will be meeting again with, the work is in progress right now, but we'll be meeting again right after Thanksgiving, as I recall.
December 1st, we're gonna meet again. And what we really need to struggle through is what role we play, because what has been proposed in part is that we have a very active role in the actual planning of the facility, physical planning of the facility, and we're not prepared. We don't have the resources to do that, but we want to have a role. And that role, what has been proposed, is that we may be able to veto certain plans. And I'm in favor of doing something like that.
Yeah, I think we have to be mindful that our role really is oversight, and it's not to actually do the work. So,
are we referring to the proposal from the last meeting that the oversight have some participation?
Yes. That, okay. Bob and others were here. Mike Kling was representing Justice Wilson. And Mike Livingston was there, and there were a few others. Tommy Otake was there. Okay. So there were a number of people there. And we appreciate the work that this group has done. And so it was a great discussion.
Good.
I'm glad we had that. Thank you.
So as we move forward to looking at the legislative proposals and rewriting in terms of the recommendations from the Prison Project Group?
The Correctional Reform Working Group.
Yes. Yeah, okay, Correctional Reform Working Group. That takes us into the planning of the new OCCC, which it's all one topic combined. Yeah. And so that's their announcement for the commissioners that where we're at right now in terms of the OCCC question And we hope to hear back from Ted and Martha and Christian on next steps.
But also ask Max if he wants to add anything about the, because the next item is discussion next steps in planning the new community correctional center. So we should ask Max if he wants to put anything in. Max, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What was your question?
On the agenda, we just have discussions of the next steps in the planning of the new OCCC. And do you just have anything to add? Has there been anything happening between last meeting and this meeting?
No, we haven't had any significant movement on that. We're still meeting with various people to ensure that this project moves forward.
Okay, and this will be the last meeting that Max is going to be joining us because he is going to retire yet again.
Yes. I just, you know, since we're on this topic, I just want clarification from the commission. What is the position that you folks will be taking with the legislature? Is it to get authority to work with us in developing it? Because I believe that's within your statute right now. And if your admin rules are eventually developed, you know, that could easily be written into it as far as the building and designing facilities. But if you folks are going in to actually design and build the facility for us, I honestly believe that's going to be a problem for the future administration.
So I will say yes to the first part of your question, that we're going to participate, and no, we are not going to be designing and building in anything. We don't have the ability to do that. That's a department responsibility.
So if you have developed admin roles, wouldn't that suffice as far as your ability to engage with us and work with us in developing the new facility?
I think that a legislative authority has greater weight than administrative rules. And as this group is meeting, the Correctional Reform Working Group, we're looking towards legislation.
Well, what will the legislation entail?
We have not decided that yet. That's where we're meeting again.
Well, that's what I'm asking, because it seems fruitless to propose legislation if you have no real intent as to what the legislation will accomplish.
That's what we'll be discussing at our December 1st meeting.
Yeah, and it'll probably be a discussion with the new administration and the legislature. Max.
Thank you.
Thank you, Max. Okay, any further discussion on items 7? Before we get into the item 8, since we just had Max finish talking, I'm going to jump to 9 and just start open and bring Max back on and talk about COVID-19 real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Max, can you give us that update on COVID-19 infection?
Yes. Okay, so COVID, as of the 15th of this month, we had 11 positives in our facility, 10 at OCCC and 1 at ACCC. We're working on new numbers, and we anticipate this number to rise. We currently have no hospitalization or deaths to report based on COVID. Boosters, again, this is cumulative data as of the 15th of this month. We have vaccinated, which means either the one shot of Johnson & Johnson or two shots of the other two brands. 3,700 was vaccinated in Hawaii. 1,371 was boosted, and 220 received the third booster or more. Arizona, cumulative totals again, 951 vaccinated, 1,097 boosted. Mark, you know, if I may, can I just continue with my report? I have some other things to report out on.
Just one real quick question. Yep. Where the state on the news and in the media, and even the government officials have been talking about the potential of new variants and the rise in the COVID numbers on a daily basis in Hawaii has been extremely high. Even though there's really been a lack of concern similar to what we've had back in 2020, But it seems that your numbers are far below the community at this time, yes?
Yeah, we're doing, staff is doing a good job. You know, it still comes in because community spread is wide. You know, you're averaging over 1,000 something a week in the community. And inmates come in from the community. We've got staff members going in and out every day. So
have the CDC changed the manner by which you do your quarantines once positives are found?
We're still doing the 10 days. You know, normally it's 5, but I guess in settings like prisons, you know, 10 days are recommended. So positives, even for our staff that work in correctional facilities, the quarantine time, isolation time is 10 days.
Okay. And then last question is, are we managing with our PPE supplies?
Yeah, we have. You know, Tommy has projected out a 30-day burn rate, and facilities have been informed that they need to have at least 30-day burn rate in stock. Haima has been very generous in giving us whatever they have on stock. We have had to order special, larger size Tyvek suits and all of that, but we do have enough PPEs on hand.
Thank you, Max. Go ahead with the rest of your report.
Yeah, so I just wanted to report that, you know, inmates in Arizona right now, the population is under 1,000. So it's 966. I believe this is the first time that we've been under 1,000 since 2020. We also have been working with a group to provide makahiki services. So we had makahiki at Wai'alba on the 7th of November. Arizona had a big event yesterday. And I think media coverage, Hawaii News Now was there. You know, they're actually going to probably put out something soon, I think. Women's is scheduled for the 28th. Halaba is scheduled for the 13th and 14th. Given the fact that makahiki has not taken place for several years now, the facilities in Hawaii will experience a very soft rollout. So they're limiting participation, I think, to 15 per service. We also provided media tours this month to all Hawaii facilities. Hawaii News Now requested a media tour of Saguaro, so that was done the same day as makahiki yesterday. We also put up on our website, it's under the corrections tab, the death notification. So you find the names of people that have died in custody. So, you know, my stance has always been that, you know, I don't have a problem releasing the information on death as long as the laws allow me to. I think Judge Donati's ruling kind of opened the door for that. So we, you know, inserted a link in our website or death notification. Couple things.
I'm sorry, Max, can you just explain that again? Given Jack Swanaki's decision, you've done what with your website?
We've added a page in there as far as the names of people that have died.
Oh, okay.
The past three years. So yeah, 20, 21, and 22. So it's just the names.
So it's not a date or a reason for death.
No, we're not putting cause of death in there. That would be a little bit too much.
But are you putting the date of death?
No, we're not putting the date because they told us just to publish. We were advised just to publish at this time.
Okay.
But it is in chronological. Clarification on the grievance officers. We do not have grievance officers at each facility. Right now, all grievance officers operate out of Halaba. And grievances are sent there for them to address. The issue of the petty misdemeanors, the 132 at OCCC, these are not petty misdemeanors, but these are pretrial misdemeanors, which could include petty misdemeanors. And suicide logs, Commissioner Sakai, are still kept. Officers that are assigned to suicide watch maintain those suicide logs and keep detailed records as to background checks that they need to, they're required to do.
So that's in accordance with policy, correct?
Yes, in accordance to the suicide watch policy.
So I think what Ted was requesting is just that Kristen review those logs to ensure that they are abiding by your policy.
Yeah, so anybody on suicide watch, you could go up to the officer assigned to the watch and ask to see what the log is, and they should have the log available for it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, and in closing, I'd just like to say this is my last commission meeting as Director of Department of Public Safety. It's been challenging working with this commission. In working with anybody, mm-hmm. I believe there's a level of trust that needs to be, established. And sometimes I don't get that from the commission. It seems like you're really quick to point out problems, but I have not received a recommendation yet from the commission as to how to address these problems. We talk about transparency and exchanging of information, but this morning, this was the first that we had heard about from the coordinator about our wardens being disrespectful to inmates based on written documents that she had. Well, we would appreciate if these things that do come up, if it could be brought to our attention so we could address it. We will address it now. We'll go back and take a look at it. But this is the level of trust that I'm expecting. If you discover something, bring it to us before you air it out there. I know it's your responsibility to air it to the public, but give us a chance to rectify the problem. At least give us a head up so we know what's going on. I said my piece about the upcoming legislature and, the commission's position about working with the department. If it's working with the department, I don't see a problem with that. I think, you have the authority to work with the department and make recommendations on the design and build of the new facility. But I think if it's to design and take over the project, there may be an issue at hand. But I would hope that the commission will work with the future director, exchange information, exchange ideas, and most of all, provide recommendations. Public safety is a very complicated department. Ted, you're a director. You know how complicated this department can be with all the issues that we have. Martha and Mark, you worked in the department, you know how chaotic you can get also. So, my request is that commission actually works with the future administration to provide insight and recommendations, not just point out problems that we have. And believe me, we're aware of the problems and, we're trying to fix them, but unfortunately, a lot of times, we don't get them as resolved as fast as everybody else wants. So, thank you.
Max, I have, I'm sorry. I just wanted to have a few questions on a matter before I ask commissioners for final comment on what you just spoke about. But I'm trying to think back to what you just said on the grievance process. So I just get an understanding of what the status is right now. When you say there's no grievance officers at some of the facilities, is that a staffing issue?
We have three grievance officers assigned to IIO, and that's all we have for the whole state. So we don't have the ability to have a grievance officer in each facility. So it's a centralized thing. IIO is under the director's office, so they work directly under the director's office at this point. So if we had the ability to staff each facility, that would be great, but given the conditions, the working conditions in the facility also, I think our grievance staff is doing a great job with what they can do in servicing the state at this point.
In my memory of the process, I know there were, when you're filling out the grievance form itself is a multiple copies. When the inmate writes on the grievance, there's copies attached to it that when he turns it in, he rips his copy off. So he has a documentation that he submitted the grievance. And then that document is normally signed off that somebody received it and passed it to the grievance officer, where the grievance officer logs it that they received it. And then the grievance officer's responsibility is to review it and then look at the appropriate steps and who's the best person to answer it. Are the grievance officers that you mentioned maintaining the logs for the receivings of those grievances, as well as the step that they're involved?
Yes. So they're receiving the grievances, logging them, and then distributing them, or you know, responding to the inmate as appropriate.
Okay. And I'm recalling that a lot of the responses are on that same document or a copy of that document.
I beg your pardon, Mark. I'm sorry.
A lot of the responses to those grievances are typed on the actual grievance that was submitted. There's a space for the response and the copy returned back to the offender, right? Okay.
It hasn't changed since you were here.
Okay.
We're currently working to, you know, see if we can do it electronically at this point, where they could, you know, submit grievances through iPads that we have, but that's still in the works.
Max, I have a question to follow up on that. Are the three grievance officers that you have, are they all assigned to Honolulu?
They're located at Halawa because Halawa had the space for them to set up an office.
So if there is a grievance from a facility, especially a neighbor island facility, is it possible for the grievance officer to travel to that facility to do further investigation?
They're not traveling to facilities at this time. It's pretty much brokered out back to the facility for follow-up if needed. But no, the grievance officers, it's a possibility, but grievance officers have not traveled to different facilities.
So it might end up that the warden is the one that really just is on their own and resolving it, maybe getting some advice from the grievance officer in Honolulu, but it's really up to the warden.
Right. Or, you know, it'll go up to the next level.
Yeah. Okay.
Step three would be with the IDA.
Thank you. Oh, Mike has.
Max, I've known you a long time, in court, out of court, parole, and I appreciate what you say today. You want, and I don't blame you, you want a heads up early on, and you deserve that. So I just thank you. When I'll next see you, but good luck to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Judge.
And then I got two notes here. RSV. I can't say all the words, but this respiratory something and monkeypox. Anything, any of that going on in the facilities or not?
I know we don't have any known cases of monkeypox right now. You're talking about the respiratory issue that was recently on the news?
Yes, yes. Sir.
I'm not sure, too sure about that. Yeah, we no one's reported to healthcare yet. Well, healthcare has not reported to us that we have issues with that at the facility and stuff.
It's a big thing at school. My grandkids are well aware of it and other people, and they can bring it home easily. And it is fairly contagious. So that's the two things. But anyway,
yep, we'll keep it alive.
Good luck, Max.
Thank you, Judge.
Ted or Ron, any comments?
I just wanted to thank Max for participating with us since he took office. We appreciate it very much. I do. I think it takes some amount of courage to do that. Before you started to join our meetings, we had not been able to speak to the director. So your presence is very much appreciated. Thank you and best of luck to you.
Thanks, Ted. You too.
Hey, Ron? Mark, may I say something?
Yes.
Max, can you hear me? This is Ron Ibarra.
Yes, Judge, I can hear you.
Okay, Max, yeah. Over this weekend, I was talking to retired Judge Takasi, and we were talking about why would Max want to come back after being retired? But to that, I can only say thank you for coming back. And thank you for what you did during your stint here, what you could. And at least you're open with us, and I appreciate that. And good luck in your retirement, if you ever stay retired.
All right. Thank you, John.
And Max, when we met maybe a year ago, one of the first things I said to you is, we do trust you. And I think that you've been forthright in responding to our questions. And I do understand you're wanting to be informed of things that Kristen discovers that you may be able to resolve as soon as they are discovered so that you can start responding to that. So we can talk more about that as a commission. So again, thank you again, Max. I can't believe you came back. I thought you were crazy.
Yeah, I think I'm crazy.
Max, Max, you know, everybody, what everybody just said, I'm just going to reiterate it and just appreciate, you know, I've known you for, well, 15, 20 years. I can't remember now. But the fact that, you know, we as a commission are new, the fact that COVID happened, we were never really trained as a commission to know how to do oversight. We didn't have staff and we didn't have communications with the director at the time we were created. And the fact that what had just happened when you raised your hand and stepped forward and took the courageous decision to become the director for just a 2-year period, you know, that I got high respect for you and that. And everything that's happened in our relationship, the fact, I understand, historically, you will be the first director to engage the commission. Yeah. And what we've learned in the last 2 years will be the foundation of how we move forward in our discussions with the director. And everything you said today is a valid, yeah, and how we continue to develop a relationship between the commission and public safety and how we can become transparent to each other. And of course, build a system of trust that'll benefit the people of Hawaii. So I'm glad that you had the courage to step away and enjoy your life, but we still have your phone number and we will call you. Okay, Max, thank you so much. I appreciate your time, your effort, right, and your courage to be in that position that you have. So
you're a good man, Max Otani.
Thank you. I got good staff working for me. Yes. Thanks.
Okay, we're moving on the agenda item. Do we have any updates on the mental health? We continue to work behind the scenes and trying to develop, you know, our concerns in regards to mental health programming. We, you know, it's constantly on my mind, Mr. O'Malley, and his concerns and the things that he is helping it in terms of the Correctional Reform Working Group. We do know, and I'm saying this basically on what has just happened in the last couple months, that one of the platforms of the new administration is homelessness and mental health and poverty, the things you normally hear, but I believe this governor has a real push to change and make some differences in our homeless and our mental health system. So we look forward to moving in and working with the new administration and how the commission and along with public safety view the entire systemic journey of our most vulnerable populations in terms of mental health and homelessness and how we can resolve the problems that are causing, if anything, the overpopulations in our jail systems. Yeah, and looking for alternatives for that vulnerable population. So that's where we are now. And hopefully by the next month, we'll have better reports on that progress. As we all know, in a couple weeks, the old directors will be putting in their resignation and hopefully new directors will be assigned. And at that particular point in time, we will know who Department of Health is, who Department of Public Safety is, et cetera, and we can begin new relationships and continue in our discussions and our advocacy. So that's anything else on item 10 from the commissioners?
Well, anything reported, does Max want to report to anything on item 10, which has discussion of mental health programs and restrictive housings and procedures, and also whether Kristen has anything she wants to report on this?
No, okay. More than what I put put in the report.
Okay. Any comments you want to make, Max, on item 10, which is entitled Discussions of Mental Health Programs and Restrictive Housing Procedures?
I just wanted to follow up on my report last month that, you know, we issued the RFP to look at mental health procedures from intake to treatment. And I believe it closed and it's going through the scoring process, the review and scoring process at this time. Hopefully by maybe next year, January or so, we could get a contract in place for a vendor to come in to do a total assessment of our system.
Okay, thank you. I have another question also. I read in the paper that the governor said that the governor is not releasing the grant and aid money because of the way it was passed by the legislature, and that's about $50 million. Are any of your programs held up by that?
Martha, not that we're aware of at this time.
Okay. I think you would have been informed if you were affected by it, but it was an article where it appeared that the legislature passed it in a single bill as a lump of money rather than individual grants. And I didn't quite understand what the issue was, but I know it was going to affect a lot of private nonprofits. Thank you.
Okay. Let's move on to our last item, discussion on the legislative priorities. You want to take that?
Okay, so far we have two bills that we're interested in introducing. The first has to do with the relating to the correctional facility and community correctional center deaths. And in drafting the bill, we relied completely on Brian Black's proposal, which he said that he worked with the department on last year. And we have to make a tweak based on Brian's testimony, which I don't have in front of me. There appears to be one tweak we have to make. So we will be introducing that bill, or requesting that it be introduced. And it is on our website for anybody that wants to see it. And again, it is a draft at this point. The second bill we're asking to amend our bill 353L, our statute 353L-2. And we're asking that, first of all, the oversight coordinator under Section A of 353L-2 will serve a 2-year term, which is very, very limited. So we're going to recommend we change that to that it become a 6-year term. It's very hard to have people apply for jobs that are so limited. And we can reappoint the person that's there, but it's still, we'd like to expand that. The second is we want to make sure that the commission is able to discuss investigations at our meetings with the coordinator, and that we'd be able to do that in executive session. Because first of all, under 353L-3, the commission shall have jurisdiction over investigating complaints at correctional facilities. But there's no way for us to discuss it with as a commission with the coordinator because it doesn't grant us confidentiality. So we're adding a new number 5 in that section, and we're using the same language that is found in the coordinator's position, that the commission shall maintain confidentiality in respect to all matters and the identities of complainants or witnesses pursuant to an investigation by oversight coordinator. And we did it this way because the law governing the public meetings, executive meetings may be closed if the public shall be limited to matters exempted in section 92.5. And the exceptions include number 8, to deliberate or make a decision upon a matter that requires the consideration of information that must be kept confidential pursuant to state or federal law or court order. So this will give us that authority by making it a state law. So any questions concerning those two?
Commissioner?
Martha.
Yes.
On the bill regarding reporting of deaths,
yes.
I just want to, I don't know if I want to propose a change, but if you look at that bill, in section 1, subsection 1, correctional facility or community correctional center employee. This is reporting the death or injury of an employee. It says dies on the grounds of or while on duty at a correctional facility or community correctional center. I think we need to amend that a little bit, because a lot of times correctional employees are assigned to duties that take them away from the correctional facility. For example, inmate transport or hospital. So I think the way this is written, if you're transporting an inmate outside of the facility and something happens to you as an employee, you may not be covered. This instance may not be covered under the wording.
Okay, as I read it, and again, this is based on Brian's recommendation, but I thought it was particularly addressing that if they are not physically located on the grounds, but they are on duty at the correctional facility, whether it be at a hospital, in transport, visiting a funeral visit or something like that. That's how I interpreted it.
Well, it says while on duty at a correctional facility. So that gets, to me, I guess, pretty specific. I don't know if I'm picking at hairs or not.
Yeah. So.
But I understand. I agree with the concept. It's just a specific wording.
While on duty, period.
We can't do it without the word "at." It would make no sense. Okay. Well, I'll discuss that more with Brian, who's no longer in the meeting, and. It doesn't appear that we have a deputy attorney general to refer to anymore.
Yeah,
it appears, no, but she's, I think, sorry.
Well, it this whole
stuff?
No, I was misinformed.
Oh, okay. So you may be able to help us with this language. Oh, okay. And introduce yourself, please.
I'm Candace Park. I'm the attorney general.
Oh, Candace Park from the Attorney General's office has been assigned to us. And so I can discuss this with Candace and see whether it's clear or not clear. Thank you, Ted.
Yeah, just so real quick, sorry about that, the way we did that, Candace, but Candace is here. This is her first day with us, her first meeting. She is replacing Lisa Itomura, who has been with us since the birth of the commission. We're very thankful for her and all the work that she's done, and she's moved on to other duties in the Attorney General's office. And we're just happy to have Candace here to continue in the journey of the commission. I have one question.
Oh, okay, I just wanted to ask. Candace, what division are you with?
Yeah, I'm in the administration division.
Okay.
And that's the reason why they had to switch Lisa out, because there was a conflict.
Yes, there was.
Yeah.
And also that meant Craig didn't have access to her for other things because she was advising us. Okay, thank you.
As I go, just gonna make a comment real quick, Martha, on section one, item two.
Which one, the death bill?
Hawaii inmate who is incarcerated in a state or contracted correctional facility. Should we be concerned with and Ted, you too, with our offenders who are also under the jurisdiction of public safety, that they are in our furlough programs?
In our community-based
furlough
programs?
Yes,
Okay. I agree with you. We might have to amend that.
So if someone
to because I don't think we would refer to as Fernhurst as a correctional facility. But they are still under the jurisdiction of the
public safety.
So again, I will discuss that with Candace.
I'm trying to see if that encompasses all of our furlough and parole.
Yeah, my understanding is inmates in places like Fernhurst are still in the care and custody, and they're on furlough, so they're still incarcerated.
Yeah, we just want to make sure that's clear.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
In the understanding, because incarcerated versus jurisdiction might be how we define that. Okay.
Yeah, care and custody would be a better word than jurisdiction.
Okay. Now, any other anything else besides these two bills that we brought forth today? Martha?
Well, of course, we're still working on a bill with the
Correctional Reform
Group. Yes. So we're still working on that. Okay. And
as we move forward toward the legislative session, I just want to remind us as a board, we're going to start. I don't know when the bills drop, but we may have a discussion in January to look at the bills that are being proposed by the community.
Oh, it's as only well. Like seven. You only have 7 days from the opening of the session
to introduce bills. And then we can have a meeting later, a special meeting in January, because it may fall. It may not be ready by our January meeting, so that we can discuss what we want to support in the legislative process, the bills that will be coming out of the committees, as well as the bills from the community and the departments themselves that will be advantageous for the mission of the commission.
So, and I want to say to those who participate in our meetings, if you bills come to your attention, please refer them to us if you think that something that we should take a position on, because we're going to have to track all this ourselves. And
we're so excited to have Christian here.
But see, we're expecting Christian
to help with testimony.
Christian's going to have to work 120 hours a week to keep up with all the things we're asking her to do. So I presume that some of the commissioners will be tracking bills. And again, I ask the participants, please bring to our attention things that are introduced that you think would be of interest to the commission, and the commission should be weighing in on.
Okay. Yeah. So, as usual, all of you have your eyes out on the community and what's happening, and your voice is important to us in bringing these things to our attention. So thank you for that topic. As we move on in our agenda, I'll take any final remarks on the final remarks on our agenda. Bob?
I just like to say that Max and I have had a number of disagreements, but it's always been a pleasure working with him. He's extremely accessible. He's always worked together in compassionate release cases, and we've made some real progress. And he's always been accessible, reasonable, and helpful. And so even though we disagree, it's always been in good faith. And Max, I just wish you the very best in your retirement. That's all.
Morning, Kat.
Good morning, commissioners. Kat Brady here. I wanted to mention on the death bill, it says people who are in custody. What about people who are hospitalized? I know they're supposed to still be in custody, but there was a case with James Borling Salas, whose parents were not notified that he was hospitalized. By the time they found out, he was, unable to respond, and he eventually died. But I want to make sure that the death bill actually does include people who were in custody, who got transferred to the hospital, and then all of a sudden there's no guards there. So are they in custody? Are they not? I think that's an important note. Secondly, I wanted to commend the commission. I know people had problems getting on the Microsoft Teams site. So Kristen told me that you changed to the Zoom site, and I wanted to thank you so much for being responsive to the community. You really are setting a model for how to work, how the government can work with the community. And I really, really appreciate that. So thank you. And aloha, Max. Have a great retirement. Aloha. Thank you.
Thank you, Kat.
I need to just respond to that. Kat, the title of the bill we have right now is relating to correctional facility and community correctional center deaths. So notifying families about hospitalization would not fall under that title. So maybe it should be a separate. Oh, I'm not sure what to do. Let's think about it, okay?
Yeah, let's talk, because I think there's a lot of stuff we need to discuss about this.
And I do want to talk to you about it. I also am reluctant to change the title of this bill, because the getting information about the deaths is very, very important.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Kat. We'll keep in touch.
Okay, mahalo. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Cassie. Okay.
Hello, everyone. I'm Cassie. I'm the Director of Community Organizing with Faith Action. I just had a quick question for Max Otani. I see the notification of inmate death in a PSD facility page. So thank you for posting those names. I was curious about when the 2022 names will be posted, and then also how often that's updated.
Okay. Go ahead, Max, can you answer that?
Yeah, we're working on the 2022 right now. As far as posting, you know, we were told that, you know, after next of kin was notified, we could post. So we plan to post as soon as next of kin is notified.
Okay, thank you. Is it possible also to get on that page, like how often it's updated, just to kind of know how up to date that page is?
Are you saying it's not listed and they updated?
Yeah, that's correct.
It's not dated. It's not dated. So that may be something we'll work on in the future.
Okay. Yeah, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Cassie. Any other?
Can I just make one comment? Just related to death. Once you have the name of the person, I just think everybody should know that if you want to get the cause of death, you have the name and $5, you can get the autopsy report on anybody. There's no privacy or anything. Total stranger. All you need to do is go down there, request it, pay the $5, and you can get the autopsy report, and you will know the cause of death.
Thanks, Bob.
That's so interesting. We can't post it.
You can't post it, but it's public.
But it's public, yeah.
It does take them a while to get to the autopsy because they're so backed up. But once it's all there and all publicly accessible.
And that's information we can use in our legislative pursuit. Thank you, Bob. That's kind of a shock. But I don't see any more hands up at this time. Yes.
Max, I just wanted to say, I know I've known you for a very short span of time, but I've really enjoyed working with you in that span. And I always appreciate that I can call you day or night and we can talk things through. I am taking in your feedback. I do apologize. It was not my intention to bring anything up that we had not previously spoken about, but I recognize that my intention does not equal impact. So I apologize for that, and I will most certainly be more conscious with the next director, but I appreciate you, and I hope you have a fantastic final retirement.
All right, everybody. Thank you for being here today. Appreciate your commitment to the causes. And our next meeting is December. Sorry, you folks.
She had it in her report.
December 15th. Okay.
Via Zoom.
Via Zoom. So look out for the week before, for the agenda, for the minutes, and for the Oversight Commissioner's coordinator's report.
And yeah. I think we also need to be during the session, we probably will be meeting more often. And again, our meetings have to be posted a week beforehand. So we need to discuss this, but it may be that we are posting meetings and then canceling them because we don't have new information from the legislature or whatever. But if we don't post them, then we can't have a meeting. So
yeah. We'll figure all that out. Yeah. So with no further ado, happy Thanksgiving. And we see you right before Christmas. Aloha. Thank you.